The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
A good morning to you. It's approaching 6 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 20th of June, 2023. How are you keeping? I do hope you're all very well indeed. And hopefully now you'll stick with us for the next 3 hours in this show throughout the day here on your number one local radio station, Highland Radio. It's the usual busy mix, as you can imagine. Community Guard information coming up a little later on. The General Manager of Letterkenny University Hospital will be joining us, and so much more besides. Get involved in the conversation. Start your own. Pass on your information. 086 60 25000. Maybe you have something you want to tell us about. It can be a positive, of course, as well, too. Don't be afraid to share those good news stories as well. Maybe you are the one that notified the lotto that you won the lottery. You were up in Quigley's Point. You bought your ticket. You checked those numbers. What a feeling. What's it like? It must be amazing. Talking to people about what you would do if you won the lotto. And a lot of people would, lots of people play the lotto, but wonder, how would it change you? Would it change you for the negative? Maybe it'd be the worst thing that ever happened. I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25000. Give us a call on 07491 25000. The rally makes the front of the Donegal Democrat this morning. It's an action shot. Colm Devine and Noel O'Sullivan getting a bit of backwheel air. Callum Devine's mind went back to his youth on Sunday evening, the thoughts of a more innocent time watching his father Seamus compete at the Donegal International Rally flooded back. But this was Callum's moment. The 29-year-old Claudie man added his name to the famous Roll of Honour at the Donegal International Rally and struggled to take it all in as he rolled the VW Polo GTI R5 across the finish ramp at the Mount Errigal Hotel. And as you know, they were in with us yesterday and they seemed like lovely people, as well as incredibly talented sports people. Garda slow down appeals the front of the Derry Journal. Buncrana Roads Policing Unit have issued fixed penalty notices to two motorists reportedly detected exceeding the 100-kilometre speed limit by driving at 137 and 145 kilometres per hour at the weekend. Garda from Letterkenny Roads Policing Unit also arrested a driver who they said failed to stop after being observed performing a number of dangerous driving manoeuvres. A Garda spokesperson said this arrest was made possible because of the cross-border cooperation with the PSNI. The spokesperson added, bad driver behaviour is not acceptable and it will not be tolerated. Do not risk lives on the roads. On to the Nationals now, and a story really that I suppose to some extent backs up some major conversations we've had on this show, and that is in relation to the not only the availability, but the usage of cocaine and the abuse of cocaine. We heard that it is just about as easy to get a pizza in Donegal as it is to get cocaine. More and more people coming forward for treatment, and more people using the drug socially. And as I say, that's kind of been backed up now by some latest statistics, because people addicted to cocaine are now dominating the numbers attending drug addiction treatment centres, with 20 to 34-year-olds among the most desperate to escape the scourge, a new report reveals. As cocaine abuse has spiralled, it has become the most common substance for people with drug dependency seeking treatment. Treatment services are seeing people addicted to powdered and crack versions of the drug in worrying numbers, surpassing heroin and cannabis users. Cocaine accounted for one in three cases of addicted drug users treated last year, including a number who had to be helped more than once, the Health Research Board revealed. Between 2016 and 2022, there was a 259% increase in the number of cases where cocaine dependency was the main problem drug for someone in treatment. Last year, 8 in 10 addicts were using powdered cocaine and the rest crack cocaine. Health Research Board Chief Executive Mairead O'Driscoll said that, like 2021, we're seeing an increase in cocaine as a problem drug this year. It has surpassed opioids. So as I say, that is a national sense of what we know is happening on the ground here locally. Something needs to be done. But is anything actually being done? what is being done actively to deal with the issue of cocaine usage. Nothing particularly targeted as far as I can see. An update in the Irish Times and other papers today as it relates to President Michael D. Higgins's comments. He's issued an unprecedented personal apology over throwaway remarks that questioned the objectivity of the chair of the government's consultative forum on international security policy. The president singled out Professor Louise Richardson in a weekend interview where he pointedly referred to her status as Dame of the British Empire. A statement issued by Aras Nuchtaran yesterday said the president's reference to Professor Richardson of Oxford University and her very large letter DBE was made in a casual manner during the course of a long interview with the Business Post. The president intended no offence by such a casual remark. He apologised for any offence which he may have inadvertently caused to Professor Richardson by what was a throwaway remark, said the statement. And he said effectively that during the interview he was holding some documentation and her name was in bold and the DBE was in capitals. And in a casual way, he says very large lettered DBE. But the word lettered was removed from the Business Post interview. So it sounded like he was just saying very large DBE. And I think that word lettered DBE and a context as to how he said it would have been an important thing to include in that interview. But anyway, be that as it may. That being said, I don't think it changes the general public support for him in the overall remarks he was saying about Ireland's sort of wavering neutrality or moving towards NATO. I understand why he had to release that statement, because it did feel like he was targeting Professor Richardson. So important, perhaps, that he clarified it. Story in the front of the Irish Daily Mirror, or the Daily Mail, I beg your pardon. It's the stuff of nightmares, really. And potentially dependent on how the story concludes. It's a film, definitely, that's going to be made. But a desperate search is underway for five people in a mini submarine that was lost while diving to the wreck of the Titanic. British billionaire Hamish Harding and four others were visiting the shipwreck 4 kilometres below the surface of the Atlantic Ocean. Their mini sub Titan set off on Sunday morning during a break in bleak weather. It had 96 hours of air, but an hour and 45 minutes into the 8-hour mission, the 580 kilometres off the coast of Newfoundland, Canada, contact was lost with the state-of-the-art craft. Before submerging, Mr. Harden, who's 58, had excitedly posted a message to social media about a weather window opening up that would allow the group to dive after the worst winter in Newfoundland in 40 years. And he promised more expedition updates to follow if the weather holds. Rescuers are at a race against time. As of 10 p.m. last night, Titan had 63 hours of oxygen left, according to the U.S. Coast Guard Admiral, leading a massive maritime search involving American and Canadian navies and including a highly sophisticated P-8 Poseidon aircraft with underwater detection capabilities. Now, I would have thought a craft like this would have had all the bells and whistles of beacons and different safety features that would make it easy to identify. But we are talking about a massive body of water, of course. I just would have thought, as I say, in this day and age, there would have been a beacon on it that you could identify where it was immediately. But maybe it's the depth, I don't know. But they still have air, and it is possible. I'm not sure if it's likely that they could be brought back to the surface alive. But as I say, it's the stuff of nightmares for a lot of people. On to the Irish Daily Star now, and RTE's remaining silent after more than 40 complaints were made to the broadcaster over Dave Fanning's comments in the wake of Christy Dignam's death. The RTE DJ has been slammed by Aslan fans for his inappropriate comments he made about much-loved singer just a day after his death. Speaking on Claire Byrne's RTE Radio 1 show, Fanning told how Christy, who died last Tuesday after a 10-year battle with cancer, blew it royally when it came to the band's success because of his substance abuse. Really, what it came down to me is that, and I listened to his comments just out of curiosity, is Dave Fanning just doesn't say no to a telephone call. He didn't seem to be a particular fan of Aslan or Christy, and he didn't really seem to be a big fan of the music. I mean, obviously, he's, you know, a big U2 guy and all that kind of stuff. So why invite him on? You know, if he's not, I mean, this is, it was about paying tribute to someone who was very much loved. He had his faults. We all have our faults. None of us are perfect. But why invite someone on who doesn't really seem to care? That's what I don't understand. Maybe Dave Fanning was honest, and it was brutally honest. But why bring him on? Why go on if you've got nothing good to say? And he did have some good to say, but it was tinged with sort of, I don't know how you would describe it. The conversation sparked outrage amongst listeners, with RTE confirming on Monday that they had received 4 formal complaints and a further 37 emails giving negative feedback about the interview. A spokesperson for RTE, well, they're just confirming that with a quote. Okay, I presume you heard it. I say it just seemed a little out of place. The interview and his Twitter posts seem to be more about paying tribute to Dave Fanning than to Aslan. I don't know the man. I've nothing against him. But if you don't have something good to say, just say, I'm sorry. Call me back on about you two or someone else. That's the way I would suggest it be dealt with. The Irish Sun this morning on Gardaí Síochána will start buying up body cams from today. Justice Minister Helen McEntee will tell Cabinet that the process of procuring body cameras for frontline Gardaí will begin today. The Fine Gael TD will seek Minister's approval to progress the Gardaí Síochána Recording Devices Bill through the Oireachtas as a priority. She will also look for permission to draft a new bill for facial recognition technology to be used by Gardaí. So in fairness to the Green Party, they were strongly opposed to facial recognition being coupled with the body cams. They have been decoupled now. So Gardaí will get their body cams, and the use of facial recognition technology will seemingly form a different part of legislation and will be a different issue altogether. The tech will only be used to probe crimes which carry a life sentence, such as murder, rape and child sexual abuse. As I say, that's the image recognition element of it. But the body cams and it now are somewhat separate issues in terms of progression. I don't recall, really. I think there was a bit of indifference among you listeners as it relates to whether or not Gardaí should have body cams or not, but Gardaí seem very keen on having them, even though there's kind of strong evidence they don't make much difference. But anyway, finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror, claims by a Garda that officers are falsely recording checkpoints as having been carried out while doing breathalyzer tests themselves are set to be put to the Justice Minister. Now, this would be really quite significant in that, firstly, if it were to be true, the checkpoints aren't happening, which is really quite significant. But secondly, statistics would be skewed, because obviously if it's Gardaí blowing into these to fake them, there's an awful lot of more negative tests than there actually should be, which would skew the level of positive detection. Well, Social Democrat TD Catherine Murphy says bombshell allegations about the Forces Roads Policing Unit by the serving cop, first revealed by the Mirror yesterday, are very concerning for the force. Kildare North politician Ms Murphy has urged the policing authority to raise the matter with Garda Commissioner Drew Harris at their meeting, which is scheduled for next week. So important to point out at this stage that these are just allegations, but certainly worthy of investigation. A very good morning to Siobhan, Charlie, Marie. They're amongst the crew watching the show live on our social media and our website. Just a reminder for you, you can watch the show every day from 9 till 12 by going to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and you can like and subscribe there and hit the bell to be notified when we're live or when any show is live. We're also on Facebook, Highland Radio Highland Hub or Highland Radio News and Sport, and on Twitter as well. And you can click Watch Live on our website if you want to do it that way. Now, urgent action is needed to address planned cutbacks in community family planning services that will, we're told, severely restrict access to vasectomies in Donegal with the end of a national HSE contract. A vasectomy expert, Dr. John O'Keefe, joins us on the programme now. Good morning, John. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. Now, you've performed over 20,000 vasectomies and you're calling on the HSE to reverse its decision. So what is the background to this decision in the first place?
Well, it's slightly complicated. This only applies really to men who have medical cards. If anybody doesn't have a medical card and wants to have a vasectomy done, there's no problem whatsoever. They have to pay 500 or 600 euros and they can get it done fairly immediately. At present, a man with a medical card can get a vasectomy done with us or with some other providers within 3 or 4 weeks at no cost whatsoever to themselves, no cost. However, that's about to change in the middle of August, when a large section of the country will be deprived of this service. One section of the country is, in fact, Donegal, Leitrim, and Sligo. There were nobody there being able to do a vasectomy on a man with a medical card from the middle of August on.
It seems a little unusual that a medical service is being withdrawn in only certain parts of the country. What's going on there?
It's because it's an incredibly complicated thing, but the country is divided into 8 HSE areas.
Yes, okay.
And it really depends which area you're in. And Donegal, Leitrim and Sligo are Area 1. And that is one of the areas where there is no contract being issued for a vasectomy to be done. These vasectomies aren't done in hospitals, they're done by GPs. The other areas are, interestingly, North Dublin, West Dublin and Wexford. But anywhere else in the country, you can get a vasectomy, but not in those areas.
So are they expecting people in Donegal who require a vasectomy and they have a medical card to travel to another part of Ireland?
Well, yes and no. At present, a man in Donegal with a medical card who wishes to have a vasectomy, we will do them for them, but the man has to come down to Dublin where we operate.
Understood.
Yeah. At present, we're doing about 10 men a month from Donegal and have done so for the last number of years. It's obviously a big imposition for them to drive all the way down to Dublin, but these men are prepared to do it. They can get the operation done within 3 or 4 weeks of requesting it, and it's of no cost to them. They're a little bit dissatisfied having to travel, but they accept it, and they seem to be very happy with the service we're providing. But that's going to disappear in the middle of August.
Pardon my ignorance, Doctor. I'm still a little confused, though, even if they are done centrally, as to why, particularly actually if they're done centrally, as to why the service is only being withdrawn in certain areas and not everywhere. Do you have a further insight into that as to, like, what would be the logic, as you could see it, if there is any, to say, right, in HSE 1, we're not providing this service, but we are in other areas? I can't think of any other area health where I've heard something like this.
Cathcart will be proud of this. It's all down to budgets. Each area has its own budget. And in three of the areas, seven and three, they've no budget for vasectomy services. And we work in Communicare Area 7. They do have a budget.
I get you now. Yeah. So Cialta, itself has decided that from its budget for the area it covers, that it can no longer cover these costs. Right, okay, I understand. Right,
exactly.
I get that. And sorry to labour that, Doctor. I just would prefer to ask the question and get that, and then I have a full understanding of it. So
it actually took us quite a while to understand the rationale for that as well, but that is the reason.
Why is it important that this service is protected in this health area?
Well, I think it should be protected in all health areas. I don't just mean your area. Glaring emission is North Dublin. The whole of North Dublin, there will be no vasectomy service from the middle of August. And an interesting demographic, how well you know Dublin postal areas, but all the uneven postal areas are North Dublin. And they're the ones where the service is going to be withdrawn. They're also the poorest and most deprived areas of Dublin and the ones most in need of the service, the ones with more medical cards. In the south side of Dublin, in Dublin 4 and Dublin 6, the richest area of the country, a man can get a vasectomy with a medical card, but not in a poor area. There's no logic in this whatsoever. And Donegal, unfortunately, is one of the ones without a service.
And two things happen in this case, if I read correctly. A, it's actually going to lead to a greater cost to the taxpayer per operation. And B, could potentially put further pressure on acute hospitals that are already under pressure. If that's the case, could you explain that to us?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. What happens in somebody in Letterkenny, for instance, wants to get with a medical card, who wishes to have a vasectomy done after the middle of August. There's probably no choice for his GP to refer him to Galway or to Dublin. To the best of my knowledge, and I think I'm correct about this, vasectomies aren't done in Letterkenny Hospital, nor are they done in Sligo. The man would need to be referred to Galway. There's a 1 year waiting list to see a urologist in a hospital in Galway. So in a year's time, if the man goes down to Galway, sees a urologist, says, yes, we will do the vasectomy, you now go on the waiting list. There'll be another year on the waiting list. Now 2 years have passed by. And if somebody's waiting more than a year, go into the National Treatments Purchase Fund, where the operation can be done privately. So now the man will be referred to a private hospital in Sligo, where the operation will be done in 2 years' time, at a cost of over €2,500 to the taxpayer. At present, they pay the GPs just under €500 to have the operation done. That would be done within 3 weeks. Alternatively, you'd have to wait 2 years and it'd be done in Sligo at a cost of €2,500. You could not make this up.
Yeah, and it's incredibly unequal too, isn't it, in terms of who can access family planning. Firstly, there's the it now there's a financial separation even more so, but also it's a air code lottery as to whether or not you can get this done on a medical card. It's not really where we should. It doesn't sound like any advance in 2023, Doctor, and clearly it isn't.
No, and it also the Taoiseach has been on record in the newspapers going on in great detail about the expansion of family planning service and the availability to other people, whereas he's saying that on one hand, the other hand, they're removing a service. Now, I'm not too sure that when he made his statement the weekend that he was aware that these services were being withdrawn. I don't think he would have made that, had he known, but it is a fact. The services are not expanding, they're actually contracting.
Yeah, okay.
And especially to the more deprived and needy of the population, like those with medical cards.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what really doesn't make sense. And it removes a family planning option for them as well.
Yes, correct. Okay. And they have to consider a different contraceptive method. I mean, vasectomy is the most effective of all contraceptive methods. Nobody's going to argue that. And it's also for a woman. The contraceptive method, which got zero side effects whatsoever. There are no side effects for a woman if her partner has a vasectomy. Any other family planning method for a woman, no matter what it is, has got problems and side effects. Vasectomy has got none. This makes no sense, removing the service.
Okay, I presume you hope by making yourself available for interviews like this, John, that common sense prevails here.
I hope so. I really hope so. I really think the politicians aren't aware.
No, I think
that the service
is
being withdrawn. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. They're not doing it on purpose, but it needs to be brought to their attention.
All right, it's remarkable stuff. As I say, it's just not the type of story you hear too often. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. John O'Keefe. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Have a lovely day. Okay, there you go. Literally an air code lotto as to whether or not you can get a vasectomy on your medical card. And the Cialta group, and sorry, it took me a little while to fully understand that, but it's best to ask these questions, isn't it, than to pretend, you know. It is this our hospital group, Cialta, that have deemed that they don't have the budget to provide this service any longer. A caller says, if I won the lotto, I would not tell anyone at work. I would just hand in my notice. That way, there would be a collection and a going away do for me. That's Jared and Ballykelly. Good man, Jared. That's the way to do it. Why should you, just because you're a multimillionaire, why should you not get your going away party? Okay. Tight. Doesn't even cover it, Jerry. Good man. Right, okay. We got this letter in. And just want your views on it. People are starting to send in messages to us now, because we started posting one that we got in, and now people are, if they're looking for the general public's advice, they've started to send in these messages. We post them out, get the feedback, and maybe it might help people in various situations. But I'll read. The subject was wedding doubts. That's the subject in the email they sent to us. Me and my fiance, it says, are getting married next year. We've been together a long time, over 7 years. We are chalk and cheese, but that's why we click, I suppose. At the minute, we're clashing. He is an atheist and I'm a Catholic, and up until the wedding, this was never an issue. The thing is, I want to get married in a chapel. I believe my marriage won't be official without this, but my fiancé is absolutely against it and says everything should be done in the hotel venue. Am I being selfish here? I just think it goes completely against what I believe in, and as the bride, surely I get the final say. Plus, I don't want to listen to our lot preaching and whispering about a registry office. What do you think this person should do? She is a Catholic. Her partner is an atheist. Opposites attract, I suppose you could say. But it has come to a sticky wicket in that she wants an official, in inverted commas, wedding in a church. He says, nope, we're going to do it all in the hotel, which actually is becoming increasingly popular. What do you think? How should she progress from there? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. A few of you already having your say in social media. Margaret says, why don't you consider having a hotel venue? And if you know a priest well enough, ask him to give the marriage a blessing. Not what she's looking for, but thanks, Margaret. Caroline, It doesn't matter what other people think. They will have something to criticise and talk about anyway. It's up to both of you to come to a compromise. Why should you get the final say? You're a couple, and as another person said, what happens whenever you have children? This needs to be sorted now before you get married. Interesting point, Caroline. Another, I would have thought that if it matters that much to you to get married in the chapel, he would be happy to do so and make the day special for you. If you start the marriage resenting him, it isn't a good start. Angela says, coming from a mixed marriage myself, surely the day should be about both of you, not one-sided. But how, Angela, do you accommodate both? He's an atheist. Doesn't believe in church, doesn't want to go there. Mark says, in the old days, a man would do anything to prove his love for a woman, but nowadays many are too scared to get married in a church because they know that marriage in a Christian context means a life commitment. And finally, John, for now, we are chalk and cheese. This is going to lead to endless arguments. People who are polar opposites don't work. What happens if you start a family? Are the children going to be raised Catholic or atheist? That's the question. Interesting one. Right, okay, get your views in on that and help that listener. Are you noticing your hay fever is worse or there's more hay fever about? There certainly is, according to one pharmacist who'll be joining us very shortly to talk about that. And we'll also touch, I think, too, on their medical shortages as well. Stay where you are. Now we are joined by the very experienced pharmacist, Margaret O'Doherty, who has said that this is the worst year for hay fever that she can remember. And Margaret joins us now. Good morning, Margaret. Are you there?
I am, yeah. Just trying to move away. We have some roadworks out there, so quite noisy, so I'm trying to find a quieter spot.
Can't make an omelette without breaking eggs. Isn't that what they say?
That's exactly it.
So, Margaret, what is the trend that you're seeing in terms of hay fever this year? And thanks so much for your time this morning, by the way.
Well, this year, I suppose everybody's noticed that we have much better weather than we're used to. And we're into, I'd say this is the fourth week of very high pollen counts. So it's quite unusual for us to have such a prolonged spell of very high pollen. And that means that hay fever sufferers have had no respite whatsoever from their symptoms. Normally you'd have maybe three or four bad days and then there's a shower of rain. It's pelting rain for another week and you're not really bothered with it. But now they've had pretty well a full month of constant and they're finding it very, very tough.
How does hay fever...
It has to work outdoors.
Sorry, I beg your pardon, Margaret. Just for those who don't have hay fever, how does it affect people? And how impactful can it be on their day-to-day?
Well, I mean, what most people associate with hay fever is the streaming eyes. You'll see people, but it's actually very painful as well. Any bright light at all is just like sticking needles in their eyes almost. So that's I suppose maybe the most troublesome symptom. Anybody that has to, say, students that are doing exams and like they literally can't see the papers, it's blurring on them. People working with computers, that's problematic. The other thing would be nasal symptoms. Runny nose, blocked nose, a lot of sneezing. That's the main problems that people have.
How effective, and we'll talk about their availability in a moment, how effective are over-the-counter medicines for people with hay fever, or does it vary?
It does vary. Most of them are very effective for most people. The problem we're having now is because it's such a prolonged thing that people are finding that the medicines that always worked for them before just aren't working this year. The levels are so much higher and it's going on for so much longer. The other thing about the treatments is they're very effective, but they're most effective if you start them before you get the symptoms. And human nature being what it is, nobody bothers until they have the symptoms. So, and then it takes a few days for them to kick in. And that's not ideal either if you're in a position where you need to go on to work or do an exam or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And the exam side of it, really important that you highlight that. And over-the-counter treatments and indeed prescription treatments, you say, are in short supply. How dire is the situation in that regard?
Well, with regard to the antihistamines, the tablets or the liquid that people will take by mouth, there's good availability. Now, there doesn't seem to be a problem with getting stocks of those. There might be sort of maybe a few days that you're having problems just because of the demand, but the actual stock levels are there. The biggest problem is with eye drops and nasal sprays, which are particularly the nasal sprays are the most effective treatment. It sounds strange that putting something up your nose is going to help your eyes, but that is the most effective treatment. And they're in very short supply. Eye drops of all types, both over-the-counter and prescription, we're finding it very hard to get hold of stocks of those.
Right. Now, it has been mentioned too that some people are being advised by the pharmacist if their symptoms are severe or maybe the OTC stuff is not working as well for them to go visit their GP. Is that a recommendation you're finding yourself having to make?
On occasion, particularly for children, we're quite limited in what we can sell over the counter for children. Really, the only option is the antihistamine syrup, and if it's not working, you don't really have another option. For adults, most of the over-the-counter options are equally good. The problem is that if somebody has a medical card, of course, they have to pay for them over the counter, but they'll be entitled to them free on their medical card. And that's a problem that pharmacists have, that we're having to send people to a doctor to get a prescription for something that, you know, if they had the money, they could buy it over the counter.
Right. Now, we spoke to you in the past, too, about general medicine shortages. Has the situation improved at all in that regard?
Unfortunately not, Greg. Since I spoke to you last, it's got much worse, to be honest with you. We're finding the range of things that are going short is increasing. The length of time that they're short for is increasing. And the number of alternatives that we have are constantly decreasing. So when one option goes short, normally you would obviously look for something similar to it. Usually what you do find is that within even maybe hours, those options have also gone short as well. So it's becoming really, the best word to use is a nightmare. I mean, somebody said to me the last day, like, you don't have anything. And I said, well, it's not quite that bad, but some days it feels like it. You know?
But the Department of Health seems to have played down these concerns. Just reading one paragraph from a press release they released a couple of days ago, it says, the public shouldn't be overly worried. Individual brands or strengths of a medication may be temporarily unavailable, but for the vast majority of medicines, there are appropriate substitutions such as different strengths, brands, or similar classes of medicines. Does that sound right to you?
That is true. What they don't say is that accessing those alternatives are difficult. Pharmacists can't change your prescription, so when there's something that isn't available, you have to go back to your doctor. We have to contact the doctor. That's time consuming. As everybody knows, doctors are very busy. Pharmacists are very busy. Patients are very busy. They don't really want to spend, you know, have to call back to the pharmacy for an alternative. What the alternative is may not suit them. So finding the right thing. You also have the trouble of explaining to somebody that, all right, this tablet, it's the same drug, but it has a different name, it's in a different package, it looks different. You know, for people, particularly if you have eyesight problems, hearing problems, if people that have slight dementia, sometimes people, we get some people that are paranoid. I mean, they actually think that if their relative comes to them with a different tablet, maybe they're trying to poison them. I mean, I know that sounds extreme, but it does happen.
No, that's real life.
Really,
yeah.
I mean, it's really distressing for people. Even, you know, yourself, if you've got something, you know it works for you, you're happy with it, and somebody says to you, no, here's something different. It really isn't, you know, just as simple as saying, oh, come on, take something different. You know, the attitude of the Department of Health seems to be, oh, it's like one flavour of ice cream isn't available, take a different flavour. I mean, it's not quite the same thing.
Yeah. So, we've covered it on this programme months and months ago, and I saw it on some of the front pages yesterday about giving pharmacists, it would seem to save an awful lot of time for pharmacists and GPs, but given our expert pharmacists the ability to adjust prescriptions there and then, saying, look, we don't have product A, but I can give you product B, and to be able to explain in that moment why that might be a good option. I think currently it would be, well, you're going to have to go back to the GP and see if he or she will prescribe product B. Would that help if pharmacists were given that ability?
It would certainly take a lot of the pressure off. I mean, it wouldn't be appropriate in every case. There's some things where obviously, if say something like blood pressure medication, you'd have to get it checked and followed up on, and it would depend on your medical condition. But for a lot of them, say for say an eye drop or a nasal spray, one of them is very similar to the other. Swap would really not make a lot of difference. And like when this came up before Christmas, there was a particular problem with antibiotics. The minister said, oh, the Department of Health will keep this under review. I mean, he didn't tell us who in the Department of Health was going to be reviewing it, when they were going to be reviewing it, if they would ever come back to us, which they haven't. So it just seems to be that, oh, just ignore the problem and pretend it doesn't exist and then it'll go away. That seems to be the attitude that we're getting from the Department of Health.
All right. Well, they say there's work ongoing to try and improve supply chains. So fingers crossed. But as I say, we've a great network of excellent pharmacists around the country. To not be giving them the tools to do what they can seems very strange to me. But anyway, what's your advice to people suffering from hay fever at the moment? Because the Margaret, sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, the advice is obviously continue taking the medications that you're on, even if you feel that they may not be doing a lot for you. There are basic precautions you can take if you can stay indoors, particularly in the middle of the day. When you have to go out, when you come in, wash your hands and face. If you can have a shower and change your clothes, all those things help. When you're going out, even a little bit of Vaseline around your nose just to stop the pollen getting up it, you know, keep those basic measures that you can sometimes forget about, but they are helpful. But there's no doubt that managing hay fever is very, very difficult at the moment.
All right. Margaret, thanks for your time and expertise. I appreciate it. Have a lovely day.
And you, Greg.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Okay, so huge excitement across the county. Then we found out there was huge excitement, particularly in Ishone, and now we know there's overwhelming excitement in Quigley's Point because the winning ticket that shared over €6 million of the weekend's lotto was sold in McCarran's Village Shop in Quigley's Point. Hugh McCarran is with us now. Hugh, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What's the? I presume there's a lot of excitement and buzz around the shop, around the community?
Yes, a lot of excitement this morning, yeah.
All right, tell us about selling this ticket. Do you know when it was sold, what kind of ticket it was?
No, I'm not aware of what time it was sold yet.
All right, okay. And the winner, the person with the winning ticket or the group of people with the winning ticket, I don't know, have come forward. Are they known in the community yet or is it just the lotto that knows?
I have no idea yet who has won the lotto.
All right, okay. How did you find out that you had sold the winning ticket?
The National Lottery contacted me yesterday afternoon.
And is this your first big winning ticket that you've sold?
It certainly is, yes.
All right, so all very exciting. What happens next, Hugh?
The National Lottery are arriving here today around 12 o'clock for pictures and things like that. So
all right.
It's an exciting day ahead.
Okay, indeed. And you're very busy, so we won't hold you, but you can give us no inside information at this point, Hugh.
Not at the minute, no.
Okay, rightio. Well, listen, congratulations to you and all at the shop. Hugh McCarran, their owner of McCarran's Village Shop in Quigley's Point. Okay, another one of our listeners experiencing a big jump in the cost of home insurance. Seamus, how are you getting on? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right. So what difference have you seen in your house insurance?
It's gone up almost €400
so
since last year.
From what to what, roughly?
€600 up to €1,000 over €1,000.
Okay, huge. No claims, no nothing like that?
No claims, no nothing. Nothing has changed.
All right. You and know, what company are you with? I know we're probably not allowed to say, but stuff it. Let's do it.
It's like a broker.
Okay.
You know, they like search the market type thing, like, and that's the best they could get. So
really? That's actually fascinating. Yeah. So even they're shopping around on your behalf, and the cheapest they can come back with is €1,000.
Yeah.
Right. Have you tried the online search tool yet, Seamus?
No, that's just, I suppose, my plan today is because it's actually up today, so I have to get something sorted before
and make
end
sure
the business this evening.
Rebuild cost, Seamus, not what you might get for it if you put it up on the market. Can I mention the company I got my house insurance off? No, I'm not sure if I can. I'm going to say it anyway. I got mine off Kenko, right? And I had the similar situation as you, Seamus. Mine went up €300 or €400. I had my house incredibly undervalued in terms of rebuild costs. I rang them, and I think I ended up getting it for about €380, which was less than I was playing last year. So I used one of those comparison websites, but look at, give them a ring and see. And maybe if you do, will you let us know? Because it'd be great to get a follow-up, Seamus, you know, to see if you can get something cheaper. If you don't mind, just drop us a text.
Yeah.
Right?
Just for the cost of living, you know, I went through the roof, but I didn't think house insurance would go up that much. Like,
no, it's massive.
That's over 50% nearly.
100%, yeah, well, 100%. You know what I mean? Yeah, of course, it's crazy. Yeah. As you say, it's 600 there, it's 1,000 here, it's, you know, I get you. But give them a ring, give all the companies a ring. Let us know, actually, because I think you can end up saving a lot of people a lot of money, Seamus, if you have some success today. So that's it. That's your job today, Seamus. Get on the phone, get on the internet and get back to us.
I will do.
All right, and we'll throw it out there generally to wider listeners to see what they experienced and what they did. Thanks very much for your time. Have a lovely day. Right, okay, so Seamus's house insurance, no claims, no nothing, went from 600 to 1,000. And that's through a broker. Now, I hope I had similar, and I ended up getting my house insurance cheaper than my original quote was. And that's also with an increased valuation of the rebuild of the property. If you think about it, right, if you get your kitchen done now, say you were lucky enough to get your kitchen done, you're probably talking 12, 13, 14, 15,000. If you have two bathrooms, if you were lucky enough, though we'd have to fight over one toilet, if you were lucky enough, you're probably talking $6,000 or $7,000 per bathroom. I think this is all goes, does it, this is not part of your contents insurance? Maybe it isn't, maybe, I don't know. Maybe you've got two or three TVs, if you're lucky enough. That's $3,000-$4,000. Your suite of furniture, $1,500. Your tables and chairs, $1,000. It all adds up, and God forbid if you did have flood damage or a fire or something, all that has to be replaced. So you have to make sure that you can cover the cost of rebuilding the property, not what you might get, because you could probably have a house that's worth $160,000, but you couldn't build it for that. So God forbid something happened to it. You probably need $350,000, would you? I don't know, $354,000? Depending on where you are and how you built it and what type of house, maybe. I don't know, even a bit more. I don't know. I really don't. Pardon my ignorance. But between that and the contents insurance, you're probably heading towards, you know, $400,000, $450,000, aren't you? So you have to make sure that that is covered to cover that eventuality. All right. Seamus is now effectively our house insurance reporter. He's going to get back in touch with us, hopefully now, to see if he can get any savings. So it was six. Let's remember the numbers. It was 600 last year, which sounds quite expensive to me to start with. It's 600 last year, and it's gone up to 1,000 this year. Let's bring Deirdre into the conversation. Hiya, Deirdre.
Morning, Greg.
Right, now, you insured your house last year. What, it seemed to be quite a complicated process.
But people are not understanding, Greg, that when something happens in their house, they're not given the money, the proper money, for the way it was insured. And the thing is, with insurance, people are not telling you, you have to measure every room.
Right.
You have to send the measurements of every room. This is why people then, when something happens, are not getting their proper money. Because they were underinsured or whatever, they hadn't got the right footage and squares of the house.
So is this, in other words, when I sort of say to Seamus, and I thought it was great advice to say, make sure you tell them the figure it would cost to rebuild, you're saying that in the event of a claim, they actually really would have wanted more information than that.
Yeah. And I only found that out by a builder, you know, we were talking one day, and like I lost my husband, so I was insuring things, and he said, what way was insured? Did you ever measure your rooms? And I said, no. He said, right, we're going to do it now. And the insurance company said that it was done properly.
Wow.
See, people are just saying their house is a certain size and the insurance company are taking that, but then admitting it could be a bit bigger.
And
so
did
something
you,
happens and it's not getting paid.
Did you hear of a case, Deirdre, where someone wasn't paid for a couple of rooms in the house? What was the story there?
Yeah. Well, they didn't have the proper measurements of their house, and Greg.
Yeah.
And then they only paid from what size their house was insured for. That's where people's getting stuck, you know?
See, my problem is I was never asked the size of the house, so...
No, you never do. I was never asked of it, Greg. It was only the guy that was here when I was sorting things out after my husband died said to me.
Yeah. And I'm sorry that you lost your husband. I'm sorry you lost Thank your you. Husband, Deirdre. I know it must be very difficult for you.
But he said to me, did I ever measure the rooms? And he said, no. He said, we are today.
And do you remember getting back in contact with the insurance company with the room sizes? Or what? How did that conversation go? Did you call them up and say, look at...
It was me said to them then about the size, but I give her all the measurements of my rooms. You know, I said, I want to do this properly, I said, because I don't understand much, I said, but if something goes, I hope not ever happens to me, I said, I want to, be able to claim back the proper money,
Yeah. Wow.
So I give her the kitchen, the sitting room, the bedrooms, the bathroom, the full measurements of the house. This is where people's getting stuck.
Yeah, that's
They just say their house. Certain size.
Right, okay.
And then if something happens again, the house is that wee bit bigger or they're not getting paid.
Okay.
To be wary about,
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to look into that. Okay, that could be very valuable advice, Deirdre. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
No bother, I hope
you're okay and everything's okay with you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a
All right.
good day, Greg.
You too,
thank you.
Deirdre. Bye. Take care of yourself. Thank you very much indeed. Okay. Has anyone ever heard of that before? It's something you kind of need to... check. Right, so we were talking about an email from a listener who is a Catholic. Their partner is a atheist. They've been going out for 7 years. They're getting married next year. Everything's rosy in the garden, but he doesn't want to get married in a church. She does, because that makes it official. I think she should see the red flag flying. If he does not discuss your feelings as well as his, then you need a really good pair of runners. Get out of town. Good morning, Greg. If it's not in the chapel, it's not a real wedding. If you're going to do it right... as they say, my sister is Catholic, her husband Presbyterian, got married in a Catholic church, no problem. Some men just haven't the guts for a church wedding. What does that mean about... Because that's... Mark said something along those lines, that guys kind of be avoiding the commitment of a church wedding. And another listener there says a man doesn't have the guts or doesn't have the guts for a wedding in a church. Best thing to do is not get married. They don't last nowadays anyway. Oh, come here. Don't tell me romance is dead. It's up to people what they do, if they want to get married or not, and that's fine. But if you want to get married, don't not get married because romance is dead, because marriages don't last. No? 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. We have another couple of busy hours. We're going to come back with you, by the way, with Community Guard information, where you can hear and watch for the first time the very latest appeals and information from Ungada Síochána here on the 9 till noon show before they appear anywhere else. That's coming up after the news and obituary notices.